Now, people are sending me continuity errors now for the part of King on the Addams Family.
You knew this was never going to end.
No, it's true. I got to drink some coffee. Hold on.
Oh, yeah, that's what you got to do.
Shut your mouth! I'll be out here. All right, hold on a second. All right, that's how I roll. All right, it's the Rick Emerson radio program. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. As you may have heard,
James Brown is dead.
Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson radio program, CNN radio correspondent, Ed McCarthy. Hello, sir.
Rick, how are you? Is that the most bizarre thing you ever heard in your life?
So it's not so much that James Brown is dead. It's that James Brown is dead and has continued to be dead and has been dead for some time now.
Is dead.
16 days now.
Is there a law about
you have to bury people after, I don't know, 10, 12 days at the most?
This could be like the Ted Williams story revisited here.
Oh, no, those were golden days. Ted Williams and his big frozen head. Wasn't that the deal? Didn't they freeze his head?
The family fought over that one. So now apparently the kids are going to have the say so as to where he's buried. Now I swear to you, when I was in New York at the Apollo and the big horse white carriage rolled in with the casket,
right?
And they took the casket into the Apollo, and then I flew back, and then they were in Augusta. And they had the big thing, Michael Jackson showed up and all of that.
Sure.
Everybody was reporting that they were told that the burial was going to be right nearby the James Brown Arena where they had that service. Because that's, the town he was from. Next thing I know, this morning I find out, he's not been buried yet. The casket is locked up in the house. The property's gated. He's inside. They say it's a sealed coffin. And, of course, the ex-wife or the live-in or whatever she is, she was on Larry King recently.
Didn't pay the rent or something, and so the landlord is this like the time I didn't pay the rent and the landlord sealed my apartment and stole my CD collection?
This is his house over in South Carolina, along the coast there.
So, let's just back up a second. So he dies. They put him in the coffin. The coffin then goes to his house for some reason?
They never buried him. They said they're trying to sort all the way. But
why?
I don't know. The big question here is, what does this have to do with his estate? Does that change if you keep him out of the ground for a while?
I guess. And I guess my question is, look, there's a sealed casket, and I know that they can do a lot of things with modern technology now, but seriously, after a while, there's going to be a little rank, don't you think?
Yeah, this is pretty bizarre. The Undertaker, he was quoted as saying, casket's over at his house in South Carolina. In other words, he's kind of saying, I washed my hands of this whole thing. I did my job.
So James Brown is just sort of sitting around his house like some sort of a life-size, life-size conversation piece or curio. He's just like a coffee table. He's just sort of there.
Supposedly it's sealed, but he's in there, It probably would be like, an urn and somebody's been cremated, I guess.
This is the thing, and I don't mean to sound morbid, but seriously, every time a story like this happens again, like the business of Walt Disney being frozen somewhere and Ted Williams' head being put in a box and stuck under a desk somewhere where they waited to ice it down, these things just make me want to take the business into my own hands when that time comes. When I can see the shadow of death looming above me, I'm just going to go deal with all of that myself in advance, or at least make sure that my relatives aren't on drugs or miscreants or something. Look, they really ought to just do a final tour. You know what I mean? I mean, look, he's already been out on the ground 16 days. What are they waiting for? The freshness is obviously no longer an issue.
Band's still playing.
That's what I'm saying. Look, we all know, and I don't mean to stereotype, but we all know that with musicians, with entertainers, they never take care of their money. They're always fiscally unsound. They're irresponsible. They never know. They don't put their cash in the hands of the right people. Like we had Yvonne DiCarlo, who was Lily Munster, died today. She died at some old folks' home, didn't have any money. They never know what to do with any of their finances. So here's what we do. So the family just takes James Brown, they get the band, and they just put him in the back of it. They put him in some huge, big exotic gold-plated hearse. They travel around the country, and it's just James Brown's final tour. And really, the casket just goes from one major metropolitan American city to another. Band sets up. They play they play Sex Machine for 10, 12 minutes. Everybody chips in $5. Then, 3 months later, you got enough to buy a headstone. Bada bing. Problem solved.
I didn't really realize that about Yvonne DiCarlo. Hope Butch Patrick saved his money now.
No, he'll be there next. We had a long, you don't even want to know, we had like really what seemed like a 15 or 16 hour discussion about the Munsters and the Addams. Did you know that Thing was played by about 17 different people throughout the years?
No, I didn't.
It's true. So, all right, so James Brown's body is just sitting there. So, I mean, has anybody speculated on when exactly they're going to get around to, burying him?
There was no answer. We had the lawyer on. We talked to the lawyer. He didn't have an answer for it. Just basically that the kids are going to make the arrangements, and I guess maybe there's some infighting going on there. Who knows? Let's keep him in the house for a while till we decide. What do you think?
Really, you just can't ever conceive when you're alive the things that might happen to you. If these people only knew sometimes what happened to them after they died, just the weirdness and fighting and whatnot that goes on about this. All right, so... Well, I guess we'll just sort of check in with you on a daily basis to see.
It'd be kind of like the Jimmy Hoffa. Where is Jimmy?
Well,
and where is James Brown?
See, here's the thing, though, and you and I both know this is true. I don't mean to sound creepy about this, but you and I both know the longer that James Brown is dead and just sort of sitting on a sofa somewhere, and the longer that fact is sort of known, the greater the chance that some enterprising young man with a chisel and a gun is just going to go abscond with what really must be considered now the godfather of all James Brown collectibles. We know that's true. Somebody's going to come home. James, where'd James go? James isn't there, baby. James is gone.
And he's
James,
out of that gold casket.
James is going to be in some guy's basement, and then James is going to be on eBay, and that's going to be it. I feel stolen. And then he's just... That's it. And then it's going to be, I feel sold. And then the next thing you know, his body's going to be on a barge going off to China because some guy paid $5 billion for him. So
there won't be China because it's living in America.
James Brown is dead.
That was, I didn't really expect that you were going to go that way. Let me just give you a little... Let me give you a salute the way that only you can do. Fantastic. Hey, by the way, now we might as well just do this now. Speaking of living in America, have you seen that interview clip that surfaced this week of James Brown being interviewed a few years ago where he answered every question?
James Brown is dead.
I have to figure out why that keeps playing. This interview clip of James Brown a few years back where he answered every question by quoting his own song lyrics.
No.
Okay, I'm
going to
play
it. Do you have a clip of that?
I'm going to play it for you now. I have the whole thing. This is from our good friend Seamus. I swear to God, this is not altered. This is not a change. This is not, I haven't screwed with this. This is exact. It's a minute 47 seconds of pure gold. He's being interviewed. Let's see if I can figure out by who. He's being interviewed by Sonia. Sonia Live in L.A., which I guess must have been a talk show at some point. She looks like a salad.
Oh, that was on CNN. That used to be on CNN.
Are you kidding me?
No.
Okay. Oh, there you go.
Great Sonia story for you.
One from your own archives then. So this is, I think that one of the many times he was fleeing from the law in a cross-country high-speed chase after, I believe, beating someone with a coffee cup. And I think this is right about the time that he was, wanted for some of the raping.
Was this after the crazy mugshot?
And then the crazy mugshot, and then I think he was being divorced. Now, listen to this poor woman, Sonia, who, as you just said, apparently was a CNN employee, trying to get answers out of him. And I'm just going to tell you this right now. He is as high as a goddamn paper kite. You can't really see this on the radio, of course, but they're doing the classic CNN split-screen thing where she's in one little window, and then below it is the Chiron, Sonia, live in L.A. Underneath her, it says Los Angeles. And then the other window is James Brown, and underneath him, he's in Atlanta. He has got a taupe, like a camel-colored jacket, open, no shirt, gold chain, he's all shiny, big sunglasses, what looks to be a monstrous wig, and just the biggest I am on so many drugs you can't even imagine it grin on his face. Now listen to this woman try to get an answer from James Brown about, like, real actual legal issues. And how his response is just to quote his own lyrics. Here we go, James Brown on CNN.
Where did all of this trouble begin?
Living in America. Nothing wrong.
Nothing wrong at all. You're not in any difficulty, but you're out on bond.
No, I'm not.
Have all the charges been dropped?
Yeah, I'm out on love.
Are you out on love or out of love? Which is it?
Out on love. Alone from night to night, you find me.
Now, James, this isn't the first time you and your wife have had a problem. Are the two of you going to be able to work this out?
Let's talk about some music.
Your fans will have read all about this, James. Aren't you concerned about that?
No, señor Caramucci. No. I'm concerned because there's nothing wrong.
And what are you going to say to your fans when they ask you some questions about it?
I'm going to say, I feel good. Papa's got a brand new bag. It's a man's world.
What are you going to be doing on this tour?
I'm going to be doing, Papa's got a brand new bag, living in America. Sex machine, get up off of that thing. I feel good. Yeah.
Now, I understand that you already... James, I have to ask you one serious question here. I understand you already have started divorce proceedings. Does that mean that you're now eligible?
I'm single. I want to mingle.
You want to mingle?
Yeah.
Now, the women love you when you get out there. Why do you think that is?
What'd you say?
The women love you when you get out there.
Why is that, ladies?
Well, I'm asking you.
I have to pause. She says, women love you, and he says, why is that, ladies? He's asking no one. There's no one around him. He's by himself in a little booth.
How's that, ladies?
Well, I'm asking you.
Huh? Because I look good.
Why do you think that is? You
look
good.
I smell good. I feel good.
And you sing good.
And make love good.
Oh. Well, there we are. We don't have to ask anybody else. We got that from the source.
And then he
just—that's great, you know.
And then he
goes
out.
That show used to be so entertaining, and I'll tell you why. Because I had just started. I think it was 1987. I just started at CNN Radio.
Yes.
And I remember that they had such a poor method of screening callers, and these people used to come on and they used to slip all kinds of stuff on the air. It's unbelievable.
Oh my God! And the best thing is that he goes out on that tag of just screaming. Let's hear that one more time.
Oh. Well, there we are. We don't have to ask anybody else. We got that from the source.
That's
just great. You know, I don't remember that show particularly, but I'll tell you, some of those were classics. That is an all-time great
the
one.
The look on her face when he goes, and I make love good. And she just,
got it from the source.
And she just does a whole lot of... Well, that's great, James. And you can tell, and you know this as a journalist, we've all had these moments, you more so than I because I'm a hack, and you are a real news reporter most of the time, that look on her face, and we've all seen this, when she realizes early on that this is going to be one of those interviews.
Oh, yeah, it's like pulling teeth, and you know, and you think, oh, what am I going
to
do?
And you're thinking, I've got 120 seconds to fill here, and this is, let's see if we can spot the moment.
Where did all of this trouble begin?
Living in America.
Long pause.
Nothing wrong.
Long pause. And then she says, you're out on bail. And his response is, no, I'm not. Which is just fantastic. I mean, I got to play this part one more
time. Oh. Well, there we are. We don't have to ask anybody else. We got that from the source.
Oh, I love it. I'm in tears.
It's just fantastic. Oh, all right. Well, there you go. I like to think that I made your day just a little bit better.
You know, even in death, he's still funny.
I'm just going to take you out with this one final thought. All right, there you go. Thank you. Ed McCarthy, thank you, sir.
That's great. We'll talk to you, Rick.
There you go. Ed McCarthy, CNN Radio correspondent. Ah, it's fantastic. Oh, I love this song. All right. Did I send hi today?
Yes.
Okay. High on life. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. Back after this. Enjoy this song. This is the Drive-By Truckers. Return after this with Tim Riley. Stay there. We'll be right back. to go to Vegas for that kind of treat.
I could not believe it because I threw mine out and she just brought it in there with her. I'm like, you can't do that,
can
you?
You can't drink and drive. Well, she wasn't driving.
No.
She was in the cab. But he let you drink and smoke in the back of the cab?
Yes.
Fantastic.
But not just drink a can of beer, like an actual mixed drink in a plastic cup.
I don't understand.
Bizarre.
Were you leaving your house?
No, I went to my friend's birthday party last night and we were driving back from the party.
Maybe McMiniman's bought an old cab company.
They really should. They should totally do that.
Oh.
They got enough suction. They have enough clout. They could do that.
I was reading they just bought an old funeral home.
Really?
Yeah.
I read that too. Yeah.
That's kind of cool.
They just opened it on, I think it's on Interstate.
Is it the Chimes or... I can't remember what it's called.
Have they kept like a cool, they should totally do like a cool gothic-y McMiniman's. Because they got the Crystal, which is sort of the heritage McMiniman's. Kennedy School, which is sort of snooty. They got that one, and where's that one way out there that's like a...
Edgefield?
Yeah, but it's like a barn. It's like some big, not a barn, but I mean it's out in the sticks.
Oh, that's next to where I am.
Yeah, I had a friend of mine at his wedding there, and but they ought to do one that's sort
it's
of creepy.
It's an old farmhouse.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah.
Well,
my friend Jesse had his
wedding
there.
That's Cornelius Pass.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, the Kennedy School's kind of creepy.
The Kennedy School is sort of creepy.
Mm-hmm.
They do, like, sleepover things there occasionally, don't they, where they lock it, they do some, like, it's like an all-night movie drinking something or other thing there. If not, you might be thinking of something else.
My favorite one is the one that still smells like old people that's in a nursing home in Gresham.
Who doesn't love that?
I think that's the Edgefield, isn't it?
No, it's a nursing home.
No, are you sure you weren't in an actual nursing home?
No, I mean, it just smelled like old people. They've been gone for like 30 years.
No, you can never get rid of that smell. I know that smell.
The old medicated smell.
That's the whole she was behind our entertainment center for 11 days and we didn't know where she was smell. Mm-hmm. No, because you know whose place smells like old people. I should rephrase. You know whose apartment smells like old people? See, it's funny because when I said place...
Well, these are the things people care about.
No one wants to go on that old musty claptrap, Michael. Let's talk about Aaron's apartment. No, Aaron and Jen, they
that
live...
That smells like dead old people?
What?
That smells like old people?
Aaron and Jen smell
you guys
like
are constantly
people.
Back and forth like brothers making fun of each other.
Who?
You and Aaron.
Yeah, that's true. Blah, blah, blah. Aaron and Jen live in this... I won't specify where, but they
where
live in...
people spend their twilight years.
They live in a place that used to just be old person storage.
But they're not doing nothing anymore.
Well, you know, that's like where grandma... Like, you don't want her to live with you, clearly. I mean... You know, grandma's got to stay somewhere. But it's one of those places where you can lie to yourself and say that she's... No. She's with other people like her. And she's not. She
only lasts 2 weeks after she slipped there.
She just sits there and weeps alone while watching Pat Sajak. And then, you know, when you're at home going, well, at least she's being taken care of. And then she dies. But it's one of those old high-rises that they have in Portland that used to just be stocked with old people. Like row after row of ice cubes, except they're senior citizens. But they figured out eventually that those people don't have any money because they're all on fixed incomes and so forth. And so this particular building used to just be old person storage, but as the old people die, they are trying to get younger people in there. So that's where Aaron and Jen live now.
Well, for the most part, old people aren't acting like old people anymore. They're running around gallivanting about into their 90s, like George Burns.
Wearing their hot pants and dancing the salsa.
Uh-huh.
But you go to Aaron and Jen's place, and it still smells like old people.
Maybe that's a smell that they put in there just to make them comfortable.
Like that new car smell?
Yeah, old people. Make sure you spray that on every floor, even in the stairways.
Imagine an aerosol can. They should totally market aerosol cans.
You know, it's not.
They do because you know you ever go to the gag shop and it's like, look, it's a flatulence smell or whatever. Whatever. But they ought to
kids
market
bring it into school. They're all spraying this room with old people. This is supposed to be an English class.
Spraying a room with old people. I don't even know why that sounds so repellent. It just does. This whole room has been sprayed with old people. We'll need the detox team or stat. There ought to be like a whole line of aerosol smells, though, of just really odd, repellent things. Like
it's a combination of mothballs and dirty socks.
No, I can tell you. Do you want to know what the old person smell is? I can tell you.
Well, I think we know. We can all picture it.
Do we know? What if we're picturing different things? Never mind. Anyway, the point is Aaron and Jen's apartment reeks of old people. And that's a smell everybody knows. I could blindfold you, didn't tell you where you were. You take you into a building, you say, inhale deeply, go, ah, old people. That, except you don't, right? You go, oh, old people. And that's, and I know that, look, and I know that someday I'm going to be old and I will, my body will emanate that stench.
You'll be watching Pat Robertson.
The smell of old people will be coming off me, coming from every wrinkle and pore and fold. But, you know, for now, I'm young and vital, sort of. Slightly unstable. And so I don't smell of old people now. So I'm going to cherish, that is my message to you, young people. Cherish every day that you do not smell like a senior citizen. Because that day comes for all of us. That day comes for all of us.
How did you even start talking about this?
I don't know. Here's Tim Riley.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Well, guess what? A lot of people are having meetings with the president today, and he's just as severed as ever. They're so shocked. Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid said the president has already made up his mind.
The speech is written. He's been practicing the speech. And he listened to us. He was attentive to everything we said. But the speech is written. What effect could it have?
He's attentive the way that people in comas are attentive. When their eyes are propped open and it looks like they're listening and really their brain's just not working anymore.
He smells like an old president. Nancy Pelosi said she met with the president and he won't change his mind.
There's a difference between notification and consultation. This was notification, not consultation.
Quit rhyming things. She's trying to be like a silver-tongued orator and it's just not in her.
I kind of find her endearing.
Well,
it is because she's basically saying that she had no choice in the matter.
I find her endearing only in the sense that I get the feeling that, you know, she just kind of puts the smack down. I like her because she's sort of bitchy. And there's just no other way to put it. She is just sort of...
She's an Italian from the old neighborhood.
Via San Francisco, which you'll notice by the, and you were totally right about this, that they gloss over that fact now. They talk about her, and they don't talk, they call her Nancy Pelosi, but they also refer to it as like Nancy DeAngelica or whatever her maiden name is now. They go right back to the, no, she's from the neighborhood, from the corner. So,
And to set the record straight, there is an Italian neighborhood in San Francisco, where only Italians live. Joe DiMaggio is one.
Is that true?
Yeah, he was married there, and he grew up there, and... is one of the few Italians left there.
I do like her. I mean, I like the fact that she's sort of in your face and obnoxious, and you know, and we always have the view on this program. Whoever's on top of the pyramid just sort of takes the hits. That being said, she hadn't really done anything so far to make me hate her. I mean, I'm sure that day's not too far in the future. But as of this moment, I don't openly loathe her quite yet. I mean, I'm sure that I will.
Well, she hasn't done anything. They gave her a croquet mallet, and they sent a whole bunch of kids up on stage to get their picture taken.
No, she's still in the like. My dial is still set to like at the moment.
Well, has Apple launched another revolution? That's what Apple CEO Steve Jobs is claiming following the unveiling of those two brand new products. Apparently, it's the first foray into wireless communication devices and cell phones. The iPhone will handle calls, text messages, play, and download music and video. But it'll become the first mobile device to eliminate a keyboard. The device will work by the touch of the user's finger. At the presentation yesterday, Jobs began by playing music and then he took a phone call.
Show off.
And let's see what happens when I get a phone call.
Is that a ringtone?
Music fades out. Screen changes. I got a phone call coming in. So I can ignore it, but I think I'm going to answer it.
You know, I want so badly to hate that guy, and I just can't, because he's just such a dick. He's just such a show off. I'm not going to go on and on and on about it, but I will say that if you really want to know all about Steve, there's a great documentary called Triumph of the Nerds, which is based on a book called Accidental Empires, both by a guy named Robert Cringely, who did sort of the definitive history of the early days of the personal computer revolution. And that guy is just an a-hole, just like an off-the-charts bastard. And I like him. I really do admire him as a business person and as a public speaker. He's a great public speaker. He does fantastic presentations, full of charisma. But, man, the guy's just an ass. Just a complete ass of a human being. And the great thing about Steve Jobs is, and then I'll quit because I know that lately I've been on a whole Jobsian worshiping kick, but the thing about Steve Jobs is that he is great for exactly the same reason that he's terrible. Not unlike Bono. He is sort of the Bono of the personal computer industry, where he's just so shameless, and the things he says are just so perfectly crafted, and his... little sort of cutesy asides and sort of provocative statements are so perfect and so well done that you get the feeling that he developed them in a lab somewhere. Like I've always said, like the thing about Bono is Bono had that definitive, what I consider the definitive Bono moment. which is the two definitive Bono moments, and I will tie these all together, but the two definitive Bono moments are one, when he, remember when Bono was at the Super Bowl after 9/11 and he literally wrapped himself in an American flag? I don't mean figuratively. I mean he wrapped himself in a goddamned American flag.
Yeah.
And he's singing that song. And he's all like, I'm Bono, you know, or whatever the song is. And the Edge is playing his one chord that he always plays behind him. And and then the names of the 9/11 victims are scrolling behind him. And I'm sort of like, okay, well, okay, it's recent. It's a tragedy. Maybe he's commiserating. Maybe this isn't shameless hucksterism and showmanship. Okay, so Bono is singing with the names of the 9/11 dead behind him. And I'm like, all right, stomach, keep your contents down. Don't. And then I swear to God, he slowly takes off his jacket, like stripper style. And then he's got a flag under there. And he then wraps himself in an American flag, and he's singing. And he's all like, I'm Bono, and I'm in an American flag. 9/11, 9/11. And I'm just watching it, and I can feel the breakfast just coming up. And it's so great and perfect and stage managed. And I got to tell you, as one shameless attention whore speaking about another, I'd do exactly the same thing. That's exactly what I would have done if I was Bono. Look, we're going to have the names of the dead behind me, and then I'm going to wrap myself in a flag.
Well, then next time we appear publicly, perhaps you can do that.
I should totally do
that. Will you go swaddled in an American flag?
I totally should, and I'm watching it, and I'm like, you know what? I'd do exactly the same thing, but goddamn, I hate that guy. Second Bono moment like that is on Rattle and Hum, which is full of these moments, but it's when he sings Helter Skelter. They play Helter Skelter by the Beatles, and he does that great. And it's so perfect, and again, I'd say the same thing if I was a big rock star on stage, but it makes me cringe when he just, Charles Manson stole this song from the Beatles, and we're stealing it back, you know? And it's like,
it's up to him to do it.
I know, and it's like, I get chills saying it because it's great, and it also makes me want to vomit. You know, it's just so perfect. Steve Jobs does the same thing. Classic Steve Jobs moment is when he introduced the first Macintosh, like the old boxy version. Introduced the first Macintosh, and remember, at that time, computers, no graphical interface, there was no mouse, no clicking, no pointing, you typed everything with weird commands, it was a green, blinky screen, and computers were really hard to use, they weren't friendly at all, there was no notion of a computer that was easy and friendly to use at all. So he's at whatever, the Macworld Expo, and he's up there in his bow tie, and he's doing his thing, and then he takes off, he like literally, it's like draped with a black cloth, and he literally does like a whoosh, and like pulls the black cloth off, hits the button on the Macintosh, and the Macintosh like lights up with a big smiley face on the front, and then speaks. The computer freaking talks, and it says, hello, I am the Macintosh. I would like to say hello to Steve Jobs, who has been like a father to me. And then Steve Jobs...
It does not say
doesn't. The computer says...
He's been like a father to me?
The computer says... Steve Jobs, who has been like a father to me. And then, of course, cue Steve Jobs, who clearly scripted the whole moment. He does like, you know the gesture. He does like a pseudo, like embarrassed, like he does the gesture that's like, oh, no, come on. Oh, no, this is too much. You know, and he does like the fake blush, like, oh, no, I'm so embarrassed. And like, you know that he told, you know that the night before he was in there punching someone in the face. Make it talk! Bam! Make it praise me, Steve Jobs. I mean, he's so shameless, but he's so great. I'm all wrapped up with contradicting feelings about that guy. I don't have a crush on him or anything, though.
Yeah.
If you were thinking that, because that's not right. Don't have a crush on Steve Jobs. You weren't thinking that, were you?
Mm.
There's no reason to think that.
I don't know you today. I don't know what you're on. You're freaking me out.
I know. I'm just all upset about the death of James Brown. Here's Tim Riley.
No, it just had me thinking about the thing again. But
know.
It's like the hand and Steve Jobs, but, well, never. It's two different things.
You don't even want to know. Listen to this. Do you want to hear this? Let's see. You knew I was going to get this. You knew I was going to get... continuity errors about what's it? Let's see. So we've got this.
The hand?
About.
Well, there are people who have to keep track of such things.
Thing, the disembodied hand. We know some of this. Was usually played by Ted Cassidy when Lurch had to be on camera at the same time. Associate producer of the show, Jack Vaughlin, lent his hand.
Right.
A third actor also played Thing on occasion, but his identity is not known.
I read that somewhere, and he went on to play a hand somewhere else.
Really?
Yeah.
Now listen to this, though.
But a more popular hand than Thing.
We've got, was this email, or is this a different email about this, where it says, I don't have it in front of me, but where it says that Thing was, okay, does it, who knows if Thing was a right hand or a left hand?
Oh.
Who knows, Tim Riley?
Well, it could have been either because they could have reversed the film. I would say...
I would say right.
Right.
Listen to this. Thing was usually a right hand.
Uh-huh.
Ted Cassidy occasionally used his left hand just to see if anybody would notice. Now, see, I'm glad...
He would have to be wheeled underneath the hole in the table.
Like Dick Clark.
Right. On a gurney.
Like Dick Clark again.
And put his hand up through the hole in the table into the box. So, if they wanted to keep him out of the scene, it would have to be the left hand.
But they claim here that Thing was usually a right hand. Where is your
but
god
he
now?
But he would have been in view.
I wish I was taking film of this.
This you are actually, your brain is really tying itself at the knots right now.
It looks like Tim's doing a strange hand dance.
You're going to go home and tape this. You're going to go home and you're going to tape the Addams Family.
But I'm trying to think of the set direction on this. And if he is on the gurney underneath the table and they're trying to keep him out of the scene, then the camera would have a hard time if he was using his right hand.
James Brown is dead.
No, we're listening.
I can't.
Do you think they flipped the film?
I'm thinking way too hard.
Did they flip the film? Is that what you're thinking?
Oh,
possibly.
All right. Well, there you go. See, now I have to do it. Now I have to go home and tape it so I can find out.
I'm trying to think logistically. If he's under the table, and the camera has to see, he would have to be on the other side of the table and use his left hand. But we don't know how many times that happened.
I don't know, and he says he did it just to screw with people sometimes.
See, he's doing it right now.
From beyond the grave, Ted Cassidy is screwing with us. Oh, God. This whole day is just...
We haven't even started on Cousin It yet.
Don't even...
That's for another day, another show.
Oh, by the way, the thing about the about McMenamins is... Somebody explained... Oh, the funeral home in question is the former Little Chapel of the Chimes on Killingsworth, which is now McMenamins whatever.
Isn't that where Brent used to work? I thought he worked at that one.
I don't know. Actually, I don't know.
At McMenamins or as a mortuary?
I don't know the answer to that.
Guy working with dead people.
Now, I'm surprised that area, being so close to St. John's, that a mortuary would be closed down and taken over by a McMenamins.
Really? You've got to think that's a growth industry.
I know.
It really is. There's pawn shops, gun shops, liquor stores,
because
and mortuaries.
Back when I was there, people would be dead for days in their houses before anybody even realized it.
Again... not unlike our good friend, dead in his house.
James Brown is dead.
Here's Tim Riley.
Well, as the rock group R.E.M. preps for induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, guitarist Peter Buck is looking back on the band's musical inspiration. He notes that the influence of his favorite artist is probably most evident on the group's debut release.
You know, I think the whole first album, Murmur, kind of is reflective of all of us. As a guitar player, it's certainly... That was, you know, the stuff that I grew up listening to was more kind of 60s-oriented, probably Roger McGuinn from the Byrds. And so that record, Murmur, just seemed to be kind of a combination of all the things that I'd grown up listening to.
Let's talk about R.E.M. for a second, because I wasn't really in fine form the other day when we were talking about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and many observations were left unsaid, to everybody's horror, I'm sure. R.E.M., Murmur, I'm not a big R.E.M. fan. But there's a couple, but R.E.M. to me is like you two. I'm not a big fan, but I can totally admire them, I respect them, they did it their own way. You know, they play by their own rules. They never really sold out in any appreciable way. And they've crafted some really, really great music. You know, like all the big obvious ones, like The One I Love and Orange Crush and whatever. What's the Frequency, Kenneth? And Drive, which I believe to be the best ever R.E.M. song. That record, Murmur, is great, especially if you go back. Murmur is an interesting title for it because Michael Stipe actually is making up the words to a lot of the songs. There are no words. There literally are no lyrics to a lot of the songs, and he's just doing kind of a rock woman send me to hell kind of a thing where he's just making crap up. There's no words there. I guess I don't really have any other observations. That's really it.
Well, all right.
Okay.
Well, let's move along to the birth of Burke's baby child. It's a girl.
Say a baby child.
Yes,
as though she's going to give, like, a baby lemur.
Her earth baby.
Seriously. A baby child. As opposed to the baby yak that we were all anticipating.
Well, apparently this little blessing from God has materialized. And she gave birth on Monday to Heaven Rain Charvette.
Did you just start talking another language at the end there?
This is
Whiskey Tango Foxtrot.
The baby child's name is Heaven Rain Charvet.
And super for life.
A baby child, and now you
Heaven Rain?
Yeah.
Yeah. Heaven Rain Charvet.
Oh.
This is her third child. She already has daughters Naraya, who's 6, and Sierra Sky, who's 4.
God, dude, this is
by her husband Garth Brooks, who's her Garth Fisher.
No. Okay.
Garth Fisher. Who's their former plastic surgeon and husband.
What? Oh, that's just creepy.
But now she's married,
hot, but mostly
she's
creepy.
Married to David Charvet, who remembers who he is.
Was he on Baywatch?
Yes, he was in the 90s.
Whoa!
And it claimed that he was a native of France, so I don't know.
How
if
did you
that
know that?
I remember that name.
Did you watch Baywatch?
Yes, and Baywatch Nights.
Baywatch afternoon tea. I have never in my life sat down and intentionally said, like, I now must watch Baywatch. I've seen it, like...
Remember when it was on constantly?
Yeah, I saw it in Poland.
Really?
Yeah.
I remember...
It was the number one show in the world.
You know, between that and the government breaking up and a few cartoons in between, Baywatch was a nice little break for the people living there with no food.
Most of the people just building fires inside their TVs anyway.
And big iron buckets outside, warming their hands.
But that was the most widely watched program in the world at one point.
Yeah, it's been translated into a million languages.
I remember it was always at the gym. I used to go to the gym, and those days are long gone. But when I would go to the gym, Baywatch was always on for some reason. I guess to be like motivation or something, but it was always on.
That was a really good show. I enjoyed watching it, like the mystery and how they're always solving crimes. I thought it was really funny.
I thought the most amazing thing was how they cleared everyone except for the white people off the beaches of Southern California.
Totally.
I mean, if you go to the beach in Southern California, you never find white people there. But on this show, everybody's white on the beach.
That's not Baywatch Nights. My humor's escaping. That's Baywatch...
I think this is all too much. Baywatch.
Baywatch White is too obvious. There's something there.
You know the what's the boy's name on that show?
Mitch is David.
Is the dad.
David Hasselhoff.
No, but so his kid is
Kobe.
Kirby. It's some weird name for a kid.
Anyway, he grew up now and he's
Dobie.
He looks insane. Scooby? He's all greasy and orange, and he has a pop career. And
he had some legitimate work done on his face.
Yeah, he looked. Cheekbone,
like soap opera cheekbones were added.
Oh, really?
And
oh,
huge,
he looked full
like,
on.
Tapered eyebrows and really
Kobe,
bad.
Kobe? Kobe.
What is it?
Zobie?
Kobe?
it's a strange name.
It's Obi? Oki?
Oh, God, this is hilarious. I wish I was high. This would be even funnier. Just us sitting there going through all the letters of the alphabet going, Bobie, Kobe, Zobie, Moby, Bobie, Dobie.
An Obi of some
kind. Or right-handed.
Adobe. Hobie?
Hobie!
Hobie!
Ding, 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 ding.
And I did that by going through all the letters of the alphabet one by one. And I got to one that sounded correct.
Sobe?
Yeah, seriously, that's what I was doing. I'm
Hobie? Little, is that Joby? Right?
It is Hobie. And I remember that because Hobie is the name of a surfboard company, I believe. Or it's like a surf clothing company, Hobie. All right, God.
Can you imagine we get paid to sit here and do this for hours every day?
No, I really can't. I can't think of that. Okay.
Well, all right. I have nothing more to talk about at the moment.
Well, let's talk to this guy who's in...
Kobe? Andy? Mandy? Andy?
Is this really how we're going to spend the last hour of the show? Putting just random consonants in front of the ends of words? Frank is calling from...
Arizona.
I don't know why. Frank, hello.
Hello, Rick. You know, we've been on the road, my wife and I, for a few weeks, and just missing the show, so we thought we'd call and just listen in for a segment.
Okay.
How did you like it?
Yeah, how did you enjoy that riveting discussion of what letters should be put in what order?
Best show ever, I'm telling you.
Fantastic. Well, thank you. Now, what are you on the road for? Are you just vacation or what?
We are we travel and do jewelry shows, so business.
Excellent. All right. And so is it hot where you are?
It is. It's a blistering 72 degrees, which I believe, as we talked about last summer, was the perfect temperature.
I think it is snowing. Is it snowing where we are?
Nope.
No. It was a big letdown.
All right.
Most people wanted it, though.
Got a whole lot of nothing here. All right.
Girls on the Colorado River running around in bikinis, which probably wouldn't interest anybody there anyway. But, that's the way it is.
All right. Well, thanks, Frank. I appreciate the fact that you've taken the time to call us from
Arizona. Arizona.
Thank you, sir. You call us anything. Travel safe, my friend.
Thank you very much, Rick. You guys take care. Bye.
There you go. You know, the best part is when I get emails that like this one. There's no actual body to the email. It's just a subject line that says, please stop. Like, what does that even mean? That could apply to so many things.
Obi? Obi? Obi?
Kenobi?
Nobi. Lori, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
Oh, hang on. I take off speakerphone. I had to listen for a while. You know, on the thing with Fing, he was right-handed because he always offered to shake hands with people when they came in.
Is that true?
But I remember.
I don't remember him being that congenial.
No, I don't know. We've got a lot of people. Can I just say this? We've got a lot of people who remember things about the Addams Family that clearly never happened. We have this one guy who remembers things like jumping down the road and like leaping over cars and doing a little jig on a hill.
Jumping for a ride.
And just crap that obviously never happened.
I don't remember that.
Just a product of his own diseased imagination.
Offering to shake hands with somebody to creep him out, and then they freak out and leave.
Okay. Thank you.
So, all right, bye.
Thank you, Laura. You call us anytime. Let's take a break, shall we? We'll take a break here. We'll come back with Peter Carlin from the Oregonian and the top five. More from Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth. You stay right there. We return after this.